Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the show. This is Reservations. I'm Jeremy Blair.
And I'm Rain Wayland. Oh, so, buddy, do you like my shirt?
I do like your shirt a whole lot, yeah. And yeah. Mine's just the gray. And it was my undershirt today.
For those of everyone watching, my shirt says a Martin Scorsese picture because my wife got it for me as a gift. And I love it. Especially because I think this is from Goodfellas, which I just recently rewatched. I think this is the exact
font,
the exact font and everything from Goodfellas.
I brought my tongue today, so
that's fun.
Yeah, so I mean, I made my coffee, but I knew I was going to be in a different building today, so I wasn't going to have my coffee mugs. So I put it in the metal thermos.
Uh-huh.
And it kept it too hot, and so I burnt my tongue. Things have been weird all day because I burnt it like first thing this morning.
Yeah, man, and that always throws you off, man. Like when you know your taste buds are off. Like when I had the vid the first time after I got over it, nothing tasted real. Like I remember getting chicken strips from Golden Chick. And I was like, this isn't chicken.
Yeah.
And it was the weirdest sensation I've ever experienced.
I get it. I mean, I've never had COVID, so I don't know what that's like, but I'm the chosen one.
Yeah.
But but I get it because I burnt my fucking tongue today and it's driving me crazy, you know? I don't know.
You know what I hate more than burning your tongue is when you bite the inside of your cheeks.
Yeah.
God, I hate that so much, dude. Especially like if you're talking to someone and you're like in a rhythm, you know, and then all of a sudden you just like chomp down on the inside of your cheek. It's the worst.
Welcome back to Isn't Life Hard?
Hey, life's hard, right, guys?
Yeah, guys. God, have you ever burnt your tongue on coffee? Yeah.
Well, welcome back, everyone.
Yeah.
Jeremy, you have some announcements?
I have some recommendations. Yeah.
Okay.
Before we get started, I finally saw Across the Spider-Verse. That shit was awesome. So
yeah,
go see it.
100%.
It's rad as hell. I started listening to this podcast today that I liked, but I have problems with it. So I liked it, but there's issues. Okay.
Okay.
So
it's our podcast.
No, that I have tons of issues with. We'll get to that in a minute. But so this podcast is called Radio Rental. Okay.
Okay.
And the idea is that this host has a bunch of VHS tapes and he's playing you these very obscure VHS. It really, it's just people telling true stories about these horrifying things that have happened to them. Right. But it's set up in this structure, right? The host is sort of like the crypt keeper from Tales from the Crypt, right? He's sort of goofy and he makes all these silly jokes, but the stories are very serious, you know?
Yeah.
For instance, the first story was about one of the passengers from the flight from Paris to Miami that had to divert to Boston because the guy was trying to light his shoe bomb on fire, right? And he was telling the story about what it was like to be on that flight, right?
I'm sorry if everyone can hear that.
And then the host comes back and goes, "Ooh, that was whatever bullshit." And I'm like, "Dude, that was like super serious."
Like, dude, those people could have died.
Yeah, dude. Like, that was a legit terrorist attack, and this guy's just being a fucking buffoon. So I love the storytelling aspect. I don't like the host, but I'm gonna keep listening to it. So that's what I've been doing.
It's almost like a way for the host to deflect, like to not be bothered by it. So he acts like, I don't know.
I don't know what the deal is. Because it's like, if it's going to be that goofy, like one of the other stories was this gal woke up in the middle of the night from someone knocking on her window and crouching down and whispering, "Can I talk to you for a minute? Can I talk to you for a minute?" And then he ended up being at the time, a local prolific serial killer.
Jesus Christ.
She identified him when he got caught on the news, right? And she goes, "Oh, that was the guy outside my window." Of course, the host comes back and was like, "Oh, wouldn't want to be in that." Whatever, bullshit. you know? And I'm like, come on, man. This girl almost died.
She could have been this dude's victim. Holy shit.
And then this guy's just acting the fool, man, being a goof, you know? So again, the storytelling is cool. It's very spooky, very atmospheric. But then, of course, then the host comes in and be like, "What's the next tape?" And then there's like videotape sounds and whatever. It's kind of ridiculous, but also very compelling. So I'm stuck between.
So it's like, do I really hate this or do I really like this?
I think it's both right now. I'll let you know when I keep listening to it. But anyway, that's what's going on with me.
Well, since you had some recommendations, I don't have any because
that last one was really sort of a half recommendation. But yeah,
I mean,
if you can get past the goofiness and silliness of the host, it's good.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have any recommendations because if I'm being honest, I haven't really watched anything new as of late because I just haven't been buying movies. So I don't know. I guess because I just checked my letterbox to see if there was anything. I guess the only thing, it's not really a recommendation, just to say I saw it. I saw David Lowery's Peter Pan and Wendy. It's fine. I mean, it's definitely, I'm sure as we've talked about, David Lowery is very much a one for them, one for me director. And that's not to say that he didn't have fun with it, because it definitely seemed like he really put his all into Peter Pan and Wendy. Mm. But there are scenes that are directly from the animated classic. I like how he kind of flips the script a little bit on certain things. Because from what I understand, he was trying to make a true adaptation of the book rather than the movie. So I give him credit for that. I'm like, good. He wasn't trying to do a shot-for-shot remake. Mainly, I think he was trying to do what he did with Peach Dragon. Like, yes, it's a remake, but I'm putting my own thing to it.
Yeah, I get that.
And, I mean, audiences fucking hated it. Like, I think it has like a terrible audience score on Rotten Tomatoes. But critics were kind of...
I mean, honestly, I don't think I'd like it either, if I'm being honest with you.
Like I said, the coolest thing that I really liked about it is how he flipped the story of the relationship between Peter Pan and Captain Hook. That was really cool. That Captain Hook was the original Lost Boy.
I see.
And they were best friends. And then he went away because he missed his mom. So sad. But he got lost at sea because he didn't know how to get back. He didn't know how to get back to the real world. And then when he came back to Netherland, he was a grown man, and it's very sad. And the movie ends kind of optimistically of Peter and him almost maybe repairing their friendship and being friends again. So that I really liked. And Jude Law was fantastic as Captain Hook. Very kind of silly, like the animated version, but a very still scary pirate as well. But I mean, not really a recommendation. If you want to see it, cool, it's on Disney Plus. I mean, if not, there we go.
Also, before we finally get started, Haley is coming back from hanging out with a friend of hers, and so she'll come in, and so that's gonna make noise. So I'll let you guys know when that happens, because it's gonna make noise, but I don't want to stop. So
that's fine.
It'll be fine. So, okay, Rain, what are we talking about today?
So today, very special day, because I know you've been counting down the days till we get to do this episode.
Yes.
Today is, hang on, I'm checking my notes to make sure I don't get this wrong. And I had to reset my phone the other day. So it's downloading. I'm just going to go for it. If I get it wrong, I get it wrong. And future Rand will fix it. Today we are talking about Tim Burton's 2004 film, Big Fish. 2003. Yeah, 2003. It just updated. 2003, Big Fish. I positively love this movie. Mm-hmm. As I said last week in our tease for this episode, I think it is one of Tim's most underrated films. I think it gets slept on a lot. Just because, as you said last week, it's a fantastical story while simultaneously not being a fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's phenomenal, man. And of course, and we'll get into it, the relationship between father and son.
Yeah.
Of a man trying to understand his father. And it's just, it's so good.
All right. Go ahead.
Okay. Make it quick. Synopsis. Big Fish tells the story of Will Bloom, kind of recounting his father's life. As he says in the opening narration, the way it was told to him by his father, Edward Bloom. And so the movie does this really cool thing of keeping us in the present, but also giving us flashbacks chronologically throughout Edward's life. And these stories that Edward has told all his life about the people he's met, the places he's been, the things he's seen, Will has come to resent his father because, spoiler alert, Edward is dying of cancer. And so he's near the end of his life and Will just feels like he does not understand his father. He doesn't know him. And all he wants to do is separate the fact from fiction. But especially because he and his wife were pregnant, so he's expecting his first child. And so he, as he says, which we'll get to, I wouldn't want my son to not know me. And that is the root of this movie, is just a man trying to understand his father through the stories his father has told. And man, like you said last week, it is such a sweet story because it's based on a book. I should have mentioned that. It's based on a book. And it's just like the book isn't trying to paint Edward as like an absentee father, just as a man who's lived a amazing life, essentially. Mm-hmm. And it's, and how Tim achieves that with the flashbacks, with his subtle Burtonisms here and there. It's just phenomenal. And that's Big Fish.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, that's Big Fish. Okay. So, yes, I love this movie very much. Okay?
Okay.
But.
Oh, there's a but. I know,
but this time, when I watched it, I found myself having some different unexpected emotions. Okay?
Okay.
Sorry, I moved my table. One of which, being very annoyed with Edward Bloom. Okay?
Really?
I found myself to be sort of taken aback by his perfectness. Okay?
Okay.
There's a great scene where, or a great montage where we haven't met Don yet, but we keep seeing this guy always being overshadowed by Edward Bloom.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And we're not sure why yet. We're not sure why this guy is important or whatever. It turns out,
well,
because
we did meet Don once, he was a kid.
Yeah. He was a kid then.
Yeah.
We don't know who this guy is in this context. Right.
I'm about to deconstruct it. Actually, we do know because we see his death scene. So we already know what he looks like as an adult.
That's true.
Anyway, I'm sorry.
That's a good point. But, you know, so we're watching and I found myself being like, yeah, I get it. I completely get where Don's coming from. Because, like, I get it. Because how much of that can you take? You know?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it upstages him in basketball, in football, in baseball. Did I say baseball? No, I said basketball. He's taking first place in the science fair. Mm-hmm. He's just absolutely obliterating Don. And then, of course, the big thing, he makes a play for Don's fiance.
And so, okay, so here's my problem. So my problem, okay. And we'll get to the whole movie in a second, but these were my, my newfound opinions on Big Fish.
Okay.
Is that when he finds out that Don is engaged to Sandra, he says not only is Sandra engaged to someone else, but he's engaged to one of my hometown's biggest jerks. And I go, when did we establish he's a jerk? You know? Nowhere. I'll tell you that. Nowhere did we establish that Don Price is an asshole. Okay. So here's what I'm gathering from this is that he says Don's an asshole because he's getting in the way of something that he wants. And Edward Bloom has never had to work that hard at anything. So
Okay.
I think Don is an underdog. I think Don Price is an underdog and is secretly our hero. And Edward Bloom is the villain and he stole that girl from Don. You would be mad too if some guy kept showing up every single day at your fiance's school to woo her into marriage. I'd be mad. I know I'd be mad.
Yeah, but
I'd be impressed he took all the time to plant those flowers. Other than that, I would be pretty mad.
Well, but the other thing too is, I mean, Don doesn't have a long life anyway.
Don't care.
You know, he's dead by 26 or 25.
He's dead at 26 because of all of the physical exhaustion and exertion that Edward is putting him through. No.
What you're saying is Edward killed him due to stress?
Yes. That is what I'm saying. That was my only issue with this movie. It going around this time was hey now. Let Don have something, right? Because Don has nothing. Oh my God. Or
what if it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy thing that, like, because he says after they look into the glass eye,
yeah,
you know, he wasn't old at all.
Yeah.
So what if it was like self-fulfilling prophecy that, like, since Edward knew Don wasn't gonna live very long, he was like, you know, I'm just gonna do the best I can then. Like, Don, just stay right there.
Unbelievable. It's just ridiculous. I was so mad this time watching that, because, you know, and then this brings us to Edward and Will's relationship, because I completely understand where Will is coming from. The way Edward is telling these stories, it's like, how can I ever live up to this, right?
Yeah.
To this life that Edward is living.
Yeah. That I will give you. Yes. Because I think that's what builds the resentment in Will towards Edward is that, yeah, he's like, Dad, you've had such an amazing life. How can I compete?
Yeah.
You know? And I think he projects, like, well, it's the stories. They're just stories that you know.
But see, that brings on another piece of anger, which is not only can I not live up to this life, but you made it up. So, like, why even make it up? You know, because, like, I mm-hmm. want to know who you are really, right? Haley's downstairs. Her phone's connected to the Alexa. Anyway, to turn on the lights. Okay. So that's what I'm saying is like, he's so angry, and I get it, because he's mad that not only is he creating this story where he is a hero. He's an adventurer that has lived this amazing, fruitful life with lots of adventures, where he always comes out the winner, by the way. Mm-hmm. You know, Edward is always making the right decisions, and even when it's hard, and we'll get to Spectre later, but you know, when, oh, yeah, you know, he's almost like painting himself as sort of a Christ figure by denying the temptation of Spectre, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there's of course holes poked in it, especially with Steve Buscemi's character. Yeah.
Oh, Northern Winslow.
Yeah, with Winslow, because you know he's in this wonderful place, but he can't produce the art that he wants, right? So I mean, there's, you know, he's not being fulfilled in the way that he wants, even though that he's there in this paradise, right? But then, you know, then he's the town savior later too, right? I don't know. Like, this time I was so mad at Edward, and I think maybe we're kind of supposed to be mad at him in a sense, because these stories are just so incredible and so perfect, and that's not what people are.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll tell you this, and we'll circle back to this. I started watching a video today because I wanted to find someone else's opinion on this movie. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to find some analysis.
Sure.
Because I was like, I'm sure there's analysis videos out there. And I found one from, hang on, give me 1 second. Everyone shut the fuck up.
Oh my God.
Is from, and hopefully Future Rain will put it somewhere in the final edit, a channel called Cinema Therapy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be honest, I didn't watch the whole thing, but the opening brought up a good point. The host, one guy's like a licensed therapist, and the other guy, as he puts himself, is a unlicensed filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you have a movie buff, and then you have a guy who can break down like the,
sure,
yeah. Anyway, yes. Well, they talk about the end, like they do a cold open. They talk about the end and about how, you know, Edward has lived his whole life in the fantastical and the fiction.
Yeah.
And here he is dying of cancer with facts and logic. So he's in Will's world.
Mm-hmm.
And to finally to get Will to maybe understand his world, is that's why he wants Will to tell him, how do I go?
Yeah.
And I think how you feel is valid.
Yeah.
Because I do think we're supposed to sympathize with Will, you know.
And I'll give you the flip side later. This is just one side. I'll give you the other side in a minute.
Yeah. Because I think you're right. I think we are supposed to sympathize with Will, and we're supposed to be mad towards Edward. But I think the reason why we see the flashbacks more as the fictional stories that Edward has told is for us, the audience, I guess, to go ahead and understand this is how this man is, you know?
Yeah. Well, maybe. Here's why we see the stories not as they really are, but as Edward tells them, is because you could also argue that we should really be sympathizing with Edward, because he is telling these fantastical stories as maybe a coping mechanism of perhaps he's not comfortable with who he is and in his life trajectory, right? In a way, mm-hmm, right? That he needs to embellish, right? Mm-hmm. To make himself feel worthy of the life he's been given, right? Because Maybe he feels as if like he hasn't deserved this wonderful wife and this son, right? And he needs to create a narrative where he is this larger than life figure that has earned it, right?
Right.
So there's that too, where we sympathize with Edward because he's hiding in the fiction, right?
Yeah, I could give you that too, especially with how the ending works. You know, a man tells his story so many times, he becomes his stories, you know, and that way he's immortal. So, you know, Edward does eventually become this larger than life character, essentially. That's interesting, man. That's interesting. If I'm being perfectly honest, I wasn't expecting us to go into this like this. I was expecting us to really, because you and I are children of broken homes. I was really expecting us to focus on the father-son part of it,
which we kind of.
But I mean, this is
because right, because to understand their dynamic is to understand them first, right? And so, and then that would explain their relationship with each other, because one is scared. And, or my reading of it is, one is scared and ashamed and worried that he might not be deserving of his wonderful life, and so he has to embellish. And the other one is angry because he feels as if the embellishments are sort of, you know, are a way to sort of keep his son at arm's length, right? Like, I don't need you to know everything about me. You know, I don't need you to know exactly what I was doing when you were born. Right. Which hurts, because it's like, but I'm your son. I should know everything about you. And, you know,
Right. And of course, you know, we get sort of that, a bit of that answer too, when Dr. Bennett tells him, you know, your father was away doing whatever he was doing. You know, you were born a week early, no complications.
He was selling those hands.
Yeah. and he's like, you know, then that's how you were born. Like, he's like, you know, and it, as the doctor says, if I could choose between the true version or a fantastical one with a fish and a ring, I think I'd choose the fantasy. But of course, Will, thinking in terms of black and white and in logic, is like, well, no, I like your, you know. But, you know, I agree with everything you're saying, man, 100%, because the movie does such an amazing job of making us understand both people, both father and son.
So are you familiar with the famous line from The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance?
No.
It goes as follows. I quickly typed it so I can get it perfectly right.
Okay.
When legend becomes fact, you print the legend. You see what I'm saying? Okay. Oh, look, Haley just came in. Hi, hon.
Hello.
Hi. So anyway, so I think that's what we're dealing with also is.
Okay.
She had frozen yogurt.
Nice.
Yeah, I am jealous. Yeah.
TCBY?
I don't think so. anyway. Love you, hon.
Love you too.
Yeah, quit it. Anyway, so I'm thinking that you know, that's sort of the idea here is that when, and that's what the doctor was trying to say, is like when fact blurs with legend, it's the legend that wins. Right. And I think that's what he was trying to say. Anyway, I just like that movie, The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. It's amazing. So, and everybody should see it. Okay. So another thing that I liked about this, it was a piece of dialogue, that I really liked, is when Will goes to see Jenny, at the house, and she explains the whole thing between her and Edward and all that. And that she explains that as she got older, she had the reputation of being a witch, right? And then, of course, sorry, Haley's distracting me. And of course, that doesn't line up with the plot or the narrative that Edward tells, right? Because Edward tells of a witch when he was a kid, right? In his hometown, not at Spectre and not Jenny, right? But I love that she says, well, it makes sense to him. Because with Sandra, there's Sandra, and then there's everybody else, right? And so these women start to blend together because they don't matter in a sense, or they're not specific in a sense. And I really liked that. I liked that idea of that sort of that sort of surrealist way that our brain tells stories, or that our brain fills in people when we're telling a story.
And of course I love what she says, you know, and the story ends where it began, and it's just so good.
I love the idea of him being the fish at the end. I really liked that. Which is what you were saying. Okay. Focus. All right. All right. Within each story, we get, you know, we get like a character or a setting, right? So, because at the end, it becomes extremely important who all these people are, right? And how they're portrayed. So I think I'm going to try to find his name. Matthew McGordy, who played Carl. Love that you get to see how tall he really is at the funeral, because he actually is 7.5 feet tall, I think, is what he ends up is what he is in real life. But in the story, he's 10 feet tall, right? Which is which is a big difference.
I just want to say real quick, I love a lot of the shots of Carl with the forced perspective to make him bigger than he is. And my favorite one is when he's signing his contract on Mr. Soggy Bottom's back. I can't think of the actor's name, but he also played all the Oompa Loompas and Tim's version of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. But it's obvious, like, but they obviously give Matthew just a smaller piece of paper. Yeah. And I just love how his hand is just like on his back, and he's just, I love it, dude. I don't know why. It's one of my favorite practical forced perspective shots.
They had to do a lot of trickery to make him look bigger than he actually is, which he's big to begin with, especially next to either Deep Roy or Danny DeVito. But I do like that at the end, he's still big, you know, he's still a very large guy. But we get his actual height in real life there, which I really like. The twins.
Which is another one of my favorite shots, when Steve Buscemi walks away with one of them and the other one is still standing.
And again, it's to indicate these half truths that he wasn't really lying all that much. He was just stretching the truth a bit. Right. Which is so fascinating, because he's not, he's choosing what to tell him and what to make a little more fantastical. Right.
And we kind of get a little bit more of that before the end with, Jessica Lange playing older Sandra, which, you know, shout out to Jessica Lange, man. Yeah, she's the best. But, you know, she finds that letter and she was like, oh, it's from the war. Your father went missing and they thought he was dead. And Will was like, oh, that that actually happened?
Yeah.
She's like, not everything your father says is a total fabrication, you know? Yeah. So we already, Tim's are kind of sprinkling us with a little bit of that nugget. Like, hey, like mm-hmm. Edward has lived a fantastical life, but there's truth to this mm-hmm. as well.
Yeah. You're right. And, you know, I thought that the funeral was a great way to show that, right? It was a great mm-hmm. exposition dump of visual language of showing yeah. us what was real and what wasn't, and who is real and who isn't, and how mm-hmm. are they different. And I love it, you know, because Danny DeVito and Deep Roy are still there. You know, Carl's still there. The twins are still there. Steve Buscemi's character, I forgot his name again.
Northern Winslow.
Winslow, yeah, he was there. By the way, I was really hoping they would say the name of the West Texas town they were in, but
I meant to look it up. Did they really shoot that in Texas? Because it looks like a West Texas town.
It does, but I don't know. I didn't say. I doubt it.
I don't think they actually shot it in a West Texas town either.
No,
I'm sure they found somewhere.
Yeah. No reason for such specificities with the location shooting. I don't think so. Okay. Do yourself a favor. And mm-hmm. if you can, for our mm-hmm. For our visual audience, it's so fantastic how much Ewan McGregor and young Albert Finney look alike. I don't know if you can put them side by side or whatever, but they're identical.
We'll probably do like Ewan and then Albert Finney, and then we'll fade Albert Finney to how he looked in the movie. And it's
crazy how much they look alike. And so it was perfect casting. Albert Finney's
same with Jessica Lange and Allison Lohman, mm-hmm. who plays young Sandra.
Yeah, they
look. They look like, yeah,
yeah. And I love Albert Finney. Anything he's in, he's great. Especially if you want to watch Before the Devil Knows You're Dead. I'm sure I've talked about it on the show before, but please check that out. It's amazing. We may do it on the show eventually. But anyway, so great casting there, right? Loved that.
Speaking of Albert Finney, shout out to Skyfall. That was his final movie.
Was it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Albert Finney was the best.
They trained with the same dialect coach, so they would have the same accent.
That's great, because, you know, yeah, they have Ewan and Albert almost had the same infliction with almost the exact same words.
And that's on purpose, right? Because they're supposed to, because they're the same person, right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I have stuff in my notes, I'm sure.
Well, while you look,
Spectre. We can talk about Spectre. Perfect. Because out of all the places he goes, Spectre seems to be an allegory of some kind. It seems to be mm-hmm. like it sticks out, right? Because he's going down, you know, this path that no one goes down anymore, right? And mm-hmm. it's scary and creepy and dangerous and all that stuff. But then it spits him out at Spectre. And Spectre is this otherworldly sort of picturesque, surrealistically beautiful place, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they know him, right? But he's early. Okay. Which is interesting, because it's like, is this sort of it's almost like, is it an allegory for the afterlife? Is it an allegory for like a job well done? Is it, you know, sorry, my cat is so dumb.
Is it Annie or Abby?
It's Abby.
Of course it is.
Yeah. Anyway, you know, is it an allegory for, you know, heaven?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but then it isn't, because then when Winslow is there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like I was saying earlier, he's not living up to his full potential there, right?
Right.
Which is important because Edward seems to recognize that if he stays, he won't live up to his full potential, right? Mm-hmm. Which in a sense is why it's important that he's early and that he needs to leave, right? By the way, I mean, Missy Pyle is incredible in this.
Oh, yeah.
He's great in a lot of things.
Oh, well, and Tim, just like some of the other directors we talked about, Tim reuses her a couple times.
Yeah.
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, as Violet Beauregard's mom.
Yeah.
And I think he uses her in another movie too, but yeah, Missy's great.
Yeah. And I like that he stays like a day, right? And then
he says
he's a full day, and then he goes back and Carl's just waiting for him, right? It's almost like he wasn't gone a day, would my point, you know?
Or unless the road was that long by the time Carl reached where he gets spit out again,
maybe. Although my brain seems to think that that's not what happened. Because he leaves at night. Right?
Mm-hmm.
He leaves at night, but it spits him out in the daytime.
Yeah.
So it seems to me that it's in like another plane of existence, the specter, until he goes back, of course.
Right. Well, see, so before we get deep into talking about specter, that is him being early is the one thing that I've always wanted, not necessarily a clear answer on, but some sort of answer.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, he has that list of people.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's like, you're early though. Like, we weren't expecting you so soon. And then, but then like, we don't hear about the list ever again, especially when he goes back to Spectre.
So, okay. You know? But see, that's the problem with Spectre is that when he goes back, it's a normal place mm-hmm. that has aged, that has succumbed to time. And that's not what I was expecting when he would go back, right? When he'd go back, it should be the same. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, it's this otherworldly presence. But then when he goes back, it's real. It's dilapidated. It's, you know, it's a victim to neglect of time. Right. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It ruins the magic of Spectre for me, number one. But two, then of course, Edward becomes the savior of Spectre. And then I had problems with that too. But,
Well, here's the thing, because I've been thinking about it while we've been on Spectre.
Sure.
And Edward comes to Spectre three times. Once when he's younger,
mm-hmm.
once when he's older and saves mm-hmm. the town, and then the third time is when he's laid to rest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I don't think your theory of Spectre being an allegory for heaven or the afterlife being that far off.
Okay.
But it is interesting because we know it's Spectre that he's being buried in because of the church.
Mm-hmm.
So we know it's Spectre, but all the buildings are gone now.
Yeah.
And if what we learned in literally the previous story that he had a deed of trust for the entire town,
mm-hmm.
then just like a museum, the town should have been preserved, you know? So,
yeah, sure.
So I don't think your theory is too far off,
mm-hmm.
but there are still more questions surrounding the truth of Spectre.
Sorry, my cat's being stupid. Give me 1 second. Sorry. Cat was on the counter. Go ahead.
So that's all I was saying is that, you know, There's just more questions.
Yeah. Well, it's because the way, I guess, because the way it's represented at first, I think, is so it's such a cool concept and then it just goes away.
Well, and I just had this thought. And we're told about Spectre through two different people.
Mm-hmm.
The first time we hear Spectre is from Edward's perspective, where it's this, you know, heaven on earth. any person would be lucky to end up there.
Right.
And then the second time is from Ginny's perspective, after the town has been ravaged by time.
That's a really good point. Okay. See, now we're getting somewhere, because you're right, it's from different perspectives. So it's Edward, it's Ginny, and then it's reality, right? Mm-hmm. Not to say that Ginny's isn't, right? Although through Ginny's retelling, Carl is still pushing the house upright. You know what I mean? And he's 10
yeah,
feet tall.
Yeah, he's still 10 feet tall, yeah.
So she's still doing a little bit of that embellishment there. But maybe Spectre didn't really look like that in reality to begin with in the beginning, right? When Edward goes there the first time. Maybe Spectre is just a normal place and he didn't come upon it by happenstance. And it, you know, it's just a real regular place that maybe a poet from his hometown ended up staying in for a while. Not because he was stuck there by some supernatural presence or by some sort of otherworldly presence, but maybe just because he found that he wasn't going to be a poet after all, you know? And that wasn't going to be his calling. It's going to be robbing banks and then finance.
and then Wall Street. And I love how they present that like, even though Edward's days of being a criminal were over, Northerners was just beginning.
Yeah.
But it still leaves so many questions, because especially when we get the interaction between adult Ginny and Edward, when he explains how the trust works, the town will be preserved, the town will be saved, which to me, when I hear preserved, like I said a second ago, I hear like a museum. They're going to keep it. They're going to upkeep it, make sure that people know this is a historical town. But then when we see it for the third and final time and it's reality, the only thing still standing is the church.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I don't either.
More questions.
But this is stuff that you love, because what is Edward but just an exaggerated, unreliable narrator, right?
That's true. You know,
we don't know what, you know, just like Will. Again, this is the problem Will is having, where it's like it's not all or nothing. It's not all a lie, right? And so he's having to piece together what is true, and that's frustrating.
Sorry, everyone.
Despicable.
Got to mention at the top of the show, I went and worked out, so I think it's starting to hit me. But something we forgot to mention is that Will used to like hearing his dad's stories, you know, as a kid.
Yeah.
But then, you know, as he started to get older, you know, as we see in the opening montage, as he's getting older, it's becoming the resentment, I've already heard this story before. I've heard the story before, you know, and
yeah. Which, I mean, so, to Edward's defense, he's not telling it to Will every time. He's telling it to other people. Will is just there, right?
Yeah.
It's like if I were to tell you a joke, you thought it was funny, and then you were just with me every time I told someone else, you know, you would hate it after a while, but it's new to them. You know what I mean? You don't have to listen to this, right?
It's like the whole I need a new car, but it's new for me.
Yeah. I want a new to me car. Exactly. Not exactly. That was a terrible analogy, but we'll just move past it. But you're right, because he did used to like him when he was a kid, but he just keeps hearing them over and over again. And I think as time goes by, Will starts to realize that the truth's not really going to come over time. Right? Mm-hmm. He's not going to hear the real story. Which means he's not going to get to know who his dad really is, which is, of course, the heart of their conflict.
Yeah. I do love that we never see, and we've been kind of talking about it, but I'm just going to go ahead and beat the audience, Zach, over the head with it. I do like that we see that all the flashbacks aren't the fact. They are all Edward's elaboration.
Yeah, they're all his point of view.
Yeah, I don't think even Ginny, like you're saying, even Ginny's version is somewhat elaborate. The only fantastical thing about hers is that Carl is ginormous.
Yeah.
But I really like that because I feel like even if one flashback was told, in fact, I think it would take away from the audience.
Yeah.
For Will, of course, he would be like, oh, great. That's how it actually happened. But for the audience, we'd be like, oh, well, oh, okay.
Sure.
You know, yeah,
I agree. I, you know, I think it would sort of ruin it. If we got any of the truth, just outright, but then, you know, after all of that, what do you make of Will finally, you know, coming to terms with accepting the elaborations? Because he accepts his father's truths, right? And then starts to retell them to his son, right?
I really like it because I think it's a way, because like I was saying a second ago about that video I watched, Edward, sorry, I blanked on his name. I think Edward, this was a way for them to finally bond. Edward realizing I'm in Will's world. I'm in the world of logic and truth. I'm dying of cancer. I need to bring him into my world now.
Yeah.
You tell me what I saw in the eye. How do I go?
Yeah.
And I think it does its job of Will finally understanding his father.
Yeah.
This is the world my father lives in. He lives in the world of elaboration and tall tales. And I think it's great, and I think it's a way for him to still bond with his father after his father's gone. But so his son knows who his grandfather was.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Yeah, I think that maybe in those moments he finally saw maybe the importance of the storytelling and the exaggeration and the fantastical aspect of the way Edward views his own life, because when faced with reality, it's not so fantastical anymore. And so to be able to finally see what Edward struggles with always, right? Which is, you know, his philosophy is reality isn't so great. So I'm going to tell you my version of it. My version is more fantastical, right? I'm going to tell you that version instead. And it makes things seem okay. And I think once he sees that at the hospital, I think that's probably why he went ahead and goes, I get it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Because as we see in the present of Will interacting with his dad, like when he tries to make the comparison with his dad and an iceberg, you know, I just love the line that Albert Finney says, like, because he's like, you know, I'm only seeing the small part of you, Dad. And Albert Finney is like, oh, do you need to see down my nose, my throat? You know, just taking the piss out of him, as dads do, you know. I think that's what kind of tees off to Edward, like, okay, for Will to understand me, he needs to know what it's like in my world. And I think, again, faced like exactly what you just said, faced with his reality, he's scared. He knows this is his final moments. He probably doesn't want to go out knowing his son never understood me. This is the only way in this brief little window I have. This is the only way I can get my son to understand me.
Yeah. And I think Will realizes that this is who his dad really is. This is who his dad, you know, his father really is. This is who Ed is, right? It is these stories, right? Reality is almost immaterial at this point because it doesn't matter, because that's not who Edward is. Edward is these stories, right? Edward's right. Edward is these exaggerated experiences, and not the real experiences.
Yeah, and I think that just adds so much, you know, to the film. I think, you know, had I think it still would have been a good film. I mean, if the book ended this way, and then the movie then ended this way, if Edward finally finally got what he wanted, if Will got what he wanted and separated fact from fiction, and then understood as that, I don't think the ending would have been as impactful. I think this has had to be the only way for Will to truly understand his dad is for him to tell his dad, this is how you go. And for him to finally accept, like, my dad is his stories. Mm-hmm. And yeah. And I think that makes much more, more dramatic ending.
I agree.
Yeah.
Wow. Look at that. We did it.
Well, buddy, are you ready to wrap up?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was great. Like I remembered, right. Except for the, you know, all me being mad at it thing. Fucking Don Price, man. Like that dude got a bad rap.
Well, I mean, at least he died looking at a Playboy.
Sure. Yeah, I guess there's silver linings, I suppose. yeah, I liked it. Loved it, just like I always remembered I did. And this was fun.
So. Nice. I'm glad, buddy. I'm glad we were able to finally talk about this movie that you have been.
Yeah, I was excited. Yeah.
Yeah. So, what are we going to talk about next week, man?
Well, I'll tell you. I need to find out exactly. Just like you. Okay. Next week. We are discussing Fritz Lang's 1945 film noir, Scarlet Street.
Nice.
Just like God the other ones. Never seen that. Don't know anything about it. It's Edward G. Robinson. It's got a better score than Ministry of Fear. So. That's all I can.
Okay. Well, I mean, you know, that's good to know. You know, I mean, honestly, like you said last week, I think Ministry of Fear is the weakest one we've done.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see if it picks back up again.
It should. I mean, how could it not? Edward G. Robinson is fantastic. I really like, his style. He was, one of the epitomes of 1930s gangsters in those films.
Nice.
So that should be fun. I don't know.
My God, you're gonna be mad at me.
He's iconic. Why?
But keep going.
Go ahead.
Oh, because I actually did remember something I watched recently.
Yeah, go ahead and plug it now. Who cares?
Plug it now. Oh, God, at the end of the show.
Jesus.
Okay, if you've made it this far, Zach.
I know.
If anyone has made it this far, it should have been at the top of the show. I did just finish the docu-series on Now Max about Warner and the creation of the Warner Brothers company.
Oh, did they talk about the gangster films of the 30s?
Yes. That's like all they really talked about in episode one.
There it is. Edward G. Robinson.
And
James Cagney.
It's great. It's cool. I'm not going to talk a lot about it because we're closing up the show. But as I told Jeremy, the first three episodes are great. The fourth episode is a little bit more back patty than I would have wanted. Like, oh yeah. Like, yeah. You know that deal we made with AT&T? Like, yeah, let's talk about that. That was really dumb. I didn't really care for that. But the best part about episode four is they got Christopher Nolan to swallow his pride to come in and be a talking head to talk about the Batman trilogy, Inception, Interstellar, all that great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So
Interstellar is paramount, but I understand what you mean.
No, Interstellar was, they talked about Interstellar.
Well, that's weird because it's paramount. So not that it matters.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Are you positive?
Yes.
Are you positive?
Dude, positive. It's paramount. I mean, it doesn't matter, but I'm just saying it's better.
Yeah, it is paramount.
Warner Brothers taking credit for Interstellar. That's fine. It doesn't matter. But
well, that's probably why they didn't really talk about it. I think they did talk about Dunkirk a little bit, though. Dunkirk was Warner Brothers.
Yes, it is. It was Tenet, so maybe he's back with Warner Brothers. I don't know.
No, Oppenheimer's Universal.
Okay.
I just think they got him to be like, hey, just come in for a little bit, talk about your movies with us, and you're good.
Anyway, so Scarlet Street next week. Not James Cagney. Edward G. Robinson. So it should be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, everyone. We hope you enjoyed Big Fish, and we will see you next week for Scarlet Street.